In our divided nation, too many media voices have retreated into their partisan echo chambers. It's either red meat or safe spaces. Where are critical thinkers to go? Well, you've got a home right here on the Charles Love Show. Charles understands the problems we face and will show they are rooted in culture. Prepare to be educated and enlightened with an emphasis on common sense, context, and the quest for logical perspectives. Now, here's your host, Charles Love.
Welcome to the show. This week, I continue my conversation with Matt Rosenberg, author of What Next, Chicago? If you didn't hear last week, I would suggest you go back and listen to it. We talk about all the problems in Chicago, a bit of history, and that can catch you up to today's conversation where, discussing his book, we pick up where he talked about neighborhoods and discuss which neighborhoods he went to, what he found, and we end with a little bit of Lightfoot and solutions. Matt, welcome to the show.
Charles, good to be back with you.
So I brought you back to continue our conversation from last week. We were talking about Chicago and going through your book, and we had gotten to the point where you started to break down the neighborhoods you visited. So let's start there. Tell us about the neighborhoods you visited and the people that you met.
One part of the city I went down into was the southeast side, in a way, a forgotten part of the city. Many north siders in Chicago don't even know it exists. So first I went to Pullman, then I went to Roseland. Each one of them provided me with some insight. Pullman, of course, is where George Pullman started the Pullman Sleeper Car Company in the late 1800s. And that was actually where part of the black middle class first arose in Chicago. The history of the Pullman porters, the gentlemen who were the porters on those cross-country trains, is a rich and important history. And there was a planned community. There were factories galore. It was, in a way, maybe not the height of the industrial age, but it was certainly a harbinger of the industrial age that drew so many blacks to Chicago in the Great Migration throughout the 1900s. But Pullman fell on hard times by the middle of the 1900s and eventually became very beaten down. Production at the Pullman factory stopped by 1980. They had historic townhomes that was really starting to fall apart, high unemployment, low educational achievement. And I document in the book, and I went to talk to some of the key players. There was an impressive economic turnaround in Pullman, and it came together through a community development corporation called the Chicago Neighborhoods Initiative. Basically, it was a combination of extensive partnership with grassroots folks in the community, tax incentives, which were very important, and a lot of hustle and elbow grease. And what they did was turn a former steel mill site that had turned into a polluted, contaminated brownfield site into a brand new office retail distribution park with a lot of jobs resulting. So now there's a Walmart there. There's an Amazon distribution center, a Whole Foods distribution center, Method Manufacturing, sort of a green manufacturer of household cleaning products. There's a company growing microgreens on the roof, like 500 tons a year. And there's a lot of people with jobs, and the economy is humming in Pullman. So that was really interesting to get to the root of it. But right next door in Roseland, here's another neighborhood on the southeast side that is still having a lot of trouble. Now, Michigan Avenue, part of our famous Magnificent Mile. Now it's where all the organized looting crews go. And that's just one more indicator of how far things have slipped here. People don't even feel safe on Michigan Avenue downtown. But that same Michigan Avenue at around 2100 South was home to Chess Records, the great blues label, where people like Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Etta James, Bo Diddley, and Chuck Berry recorded landmark music. But way down further on Michigan Avenue, between 103rd and 115th Street, is a neighborhood called Roseland. Now, in, I think, 1860, under Abraham Lincoln, the U.S. Post Office named that community Hope, Illinois, Well, it became part of Chicago, but it needs some hope right now. Michigan Avenue in Roseland was a beautiful neighborhood shopping district. It's part of what I heard from a lot of Black people I talked to on the South Side. There was a day in the 60s and 70s when neighborhoods were even a little bit integrated and there were thriving neighborhood business districts. You had economic life. There were no empty lots with abandoned homes. It was just a whole different ballgame. Right now, if you go down Michigan Avenue in Roseland, it looks like Aleppo, Syria, after a bombing strafing ordered by Bashar Assad. It's not good at all. You know, there's maybe two or three stores open. There have been a lot of fires. There's fly dumping at night. And, you know, this was a thriving, integrated neighborhood shopping district. People remember back in the day. The architecture still can be seen. There's classic architectural detail there. They need to bring this neighborhood back. So that's part of the picture I draw about the South Side and the Southeast Side, the challenges that lie ahead. And part of it, we can get to this later, but part of it is human potential. It's not just physical structures. That's a big, big deal. There's a reason that neighborhoods empty out, that the merchants leave, and that the homeowners leave.
Well, that's really important. I wanted to get to that next. We can talk about that now, because you talk about the neighborhoods and you paint a picture of past and present, but you also talk to people. And there's a neighborhood and a city pride that still exists in these cities. I mean, some of them are, you know, thinking of yesteryear and they're bothered by what has become, but they still have, as you say, hope. So talk about the people that you met and what they told you about the realities on the ground in Chicago.
Sure. Well, I think particularly of a guy I met in Englewood, a landmark Chicago neighborhood, partly for the challenges it faces, including violence. I spoke to a guy in Englewood named Daryl Smith, middle-aged Black man. He's like an ambassador for Englewood. Even with all of its troubles, you know, there's a lot of things happening on the upside in Englewood. And Daryl took me on a tour of 69th Street, showed me new businesses, introduced me to merchants. He talked about charity work he's doing in the community, about building the new police precinct, about community gardens. And he kept pointing out guys who would be driving by, pointing out the entrepreneurialism that's going on there. Daryl's story is interesting. He came to my attention in the summer of 2020 when he was in some video that went viral because BLM protesters came to the local police station in Englewood with a defund the police protest. And they weren't expecting a bunch of middle-aged Black men to show up and do a counter protest. But there was Daryl and his buddies. And they did that. And they're like, no, man, we need better police. Yes, but we also need more police. We don't want to defund the police. We have a problem here. In case you haven't noticed, with violent crime in Englewood and elsewhere on the south and west sides of Chicago. So that was how Daryl came to my attention. And when I went to talk to him, though, you hear stories, right? So here was one that really grabbed me, Charles. Daryl was telling me about his family history. Long story short, his grandfather on one side came up from the South, never had more than a sixth grade education. He ended up owning a number of residential properties. Now, how did he do that? He worked in a steel plant. He came home at night, washed the grime and the dirt off of himself, ate dinner, and went out in the evening to work a side hustle repairing boilers and heaters in people's basements. He saved his money. He put it in an annuity. And when people on the block wanted to sell their house, and as Daryl said, there weren't realtors back then. When people on the block wanted to sell their house, Daryl's grandfather would buy houses. He'd buy three flats, two flats, six flats. Daryl's father did the same thing. He worked in the Oscar Mayer Wiener factory in a meat processing plant. So after Daryl got his life on track, after serving 3 years on a manslaughter rap, and I talk about this in the book, He got tangled up in some stuff with some friends when he was 18. He came out. He chose a straight path. He ran tow trucks. He sold used goods at Maxwell Street Market with his father. And he inherited some property and he bought some property himself. So now Daryl Smith, 51-year-old man, when I spoke to him, owns 10 residential properties. He inherited some of those properties. So I thought, huh, if he was white, we would be talking about white privilege. So what is this? Is this black privilege or is this class privilege? Or wait a minute, could it be this is just a family's life well lived?
Coming up, more with Matt Rosenberg, author of What's Next, Chicago. You're listening to The Charles Love Show on AM 560, The Answer.
We return to The Charles Love Show on AM 560, The Answer. Once again, here's Charles Love.
Are you tired of summer nights in Maine?
Welcome back. I am continuing my conversation with Matt Rosenberg, author of What's Next, Chicago. And in this segment, we talk about some solutions, some things we need to do to turn the problems in Chicago around. And he explains his interesting take that the road to solving all of Chicago's problems must start in the black communities, like the ones he visited on the Southeast and the West Side.
I think those neighborhoods have to be the locus of Chicago's resurgence because that's where crime is the greatest, educational achievement is lowest, and economic development is most in need of improvement. So I think part of it starts with parents and parenting. In the book, I cite some of the large body of social science research by Raj Chetty, Ian Rowe, and a number of other scholars showing the actual tangible benefits to children as they become adults if they are raised in a two-parent home versus a one-parent home. There's less incarceration, there's greater educational achievement, and there's higher adult income if you are raised in a two-parent home and in a community with other fathers or father figures around. So it's not just your house, it's your neighbor's house too. So really, that's where change has to start. What can we do to make it happen? I heard from a gentleman named Ron Fields, among others, a barber with a shop in South Shore. His wife, Latasha, is someone who's been speaking out quite a bit. In fact, she's running for lieutenant governor right now in Illinois. I heard a lot from Ron Fields about the importance of making the trades, the construction trades, more open and accessible to the black and brown communities in Chicago. I think that's super important. You know, I may have mentioned the first time around a pastor on the South Side named Reverend Corey Brooks in Woodlawn is running already a really deep and important construction industry training program through his nonprofit Project Hood and his church, the New Beginnings Church. I've seen him at work doing that. Part of it is also teaching workplace schools, workplace skills like showing up on time, knowing to punch your time card, being able to deal with a Latino supervisor. He had one young man, a black man, who had a really heavy beef, and I saw them getting into it. And later on, I asked Reverend Corey, what was that all about, man? And he said, well, this fellow's gone through the training program. He's working on a job site, but his supervisor is Mexican and is giving him a hard time because he's not showing up on time and he's not punching the time cards every day. And I said to Reverend Brooks, well, so what'd you tell him? And Reverend Brooks said, I said, you have to deal with this stuff. This is part of how it goes in the workplace. This is as important as knowing how to hit a nail square on the head. And Mexicans, dude, you better get used to it, man. They're here to play. And this is another piece of what I noticed, too. It's a whole nother story. But so I think access to the construction trades, parents, and then really you cannot escape the need for real and better school choice. And I'll just give you the top line right now. Yes, we have 100 plus charter schools in Chicago. Yes, enrollment overall is declining in the larger Chicago public school district and growing, at least from 2010 to 2019, at the city's charter schools. Black and Latino parents are voting with their feet for charter schools. But why do we have a problem? Number one, Lori Lightfoot is the second Chicago mayor in a row who agreed to a demand from the Chicago Teachers Union to put a growth cap on charter schools. That is a big problem. Number two, we need more than charter schools, right? We need greater access to independent private schools, including religious schools. We need actually school vouchers in Illinois. That would take a great, great effort. Right now, we've got maybe the next best thing, which is a tax credit scholarship program authorized by the state legislature on a pilot project basis. That needs to be turned into a permanent program. That might happen this year in the state capitol. And there, at least, Charles, every now and then you see Democrats doing the right thing. In Washington state, where I've done a lot of reporting and writing, there's a class of legislators, state legislators, that I call charter school Democrats. I saw them on the floor of that state house actually enabling a new charter school bill, you know, 7 years ago, roughly 6-7 years ago. In Illinois, you had Democrats who supported this tax credit program so the Black and Latino kids could take money donated from private individuals through the tax incentive and use that money for tuition at, for instance, Catholic schools. We need more of that. We need real choice, and we don't really have it yet.
Right. And as you talk about in the book, the problems that you see and how you need to address them, you talked about education, but the other big pain points you mentioned are taxes and economics and politics. So let's end on those notes. One, with the politics, do you see a change in this? One of the things that you mentioned is funny. You said that's a whole nother story, but as a Black man, I hear it all the time. You always see these people, mostly white liberals, saying the Black and Brown Coalition, the Black and Brown, the Black and Brown. And I was like, and when I hear Black people say it, when I hear that, I ignore it. But when I hear Black people say it, I kind of laugh and roll my eyes because I'm like, I know you're either lying or you don't understand the Black community, because Black people never say Black and Brown. If you're saying Black and Brown, you don't know the Black community. And so it's interesting because as you write about politics and how Harold Washington was ushered in, he wanted to truly make change, but that machine was so strong. You talk about how Daley, too, co-opted the Latino community, right? So where do you see the politics going? Can someone come along to break the machine is one thing I want to say, because there's a reason why these reforms don't work. Either they're just, you know, comments that people make that they don't really believe, or they don't do enough. So what do you think? What political changes can actually be proposed that people will actually implement that will actually change things?
It may be more of a question of reaching a breaking point around crime, failing courts, and failing schools. You know, we need better candidates. We need people who also are not intimidated from running for office. The fix is still in. Wherever you look, there are these subterranean connections. You have to know people who know people who know people. You know, in Chicago, there's an old saying, you know, we don't want nobody, nobody sent. Think about it. And it's still true, even though the machine is dead or doesn't exist. It's actually, you know, like a cat with nine lives. The machine still does exist. It's just morphed. It's not so much patronage hiring, but it's still contracts and it's still clout, the famous principle of clout. So it's all about mutual back scratching.
You talked to Ted Dabrowski, you talked about the union problem, which we understand they kind of lost that on the state level with the pensions, but also you talked about the taxes. I don't understand. So, you know, I'm from Gary, Indiana. Indiana, we had a 1% tax cap, nice and simple. A lot of places do that. But is the problem, taxes are the problem, but is the problem really taxes as in the taxes too high, or the root of the problem, which is what I'm always concerned about, being that we are taxing because we believe that we should be paying for the wrong thing. What we're trying to fund is the problem more than the taxes, right? Because if you think you can fix, government should fix everything and have the tentacles and everything, then you need to raise taxes to do that. Maybe we're doing too much from a government standpoint.
Absolutely right, Charles. And that really is the root of it. It's you either believe in big government or you don't. You're either willing to talk about the family, about religious faith, about the agency of the individual, or you believe that everything is explained by, you know, underfunding of X, Y, or Z. And I see this right now as I'm writing fresh news dispatches to my Facebook audience about stuff going on in Chicago. And always the finger is pointed by Lightfoot and white progressives and black progressives at guns and at the lack of funding for you name it. We need more money for affordable housing. We need more money for the school teachers. We need more money for social programs. Well, you know, as Latasha Fields said to me, the best social program is the family.
Coming up, more with Matt Rosenberg, author of What's Next, Chicago. You're listening to The Charles Love Show on AM 560, The Answer.
You're listening to The Charles Love Show on AM 560, The Answer, with your host, Charles Love.
Welcome back. I am continuing my conversation with Matt Rosenberg, author of What Next, Chicago? And in this segment, we tackle the topic of Lori Lightfoot. In his book, he takes the mayor to task for policies and her approach to the problems of Chicago. And I asked why, and I've been accused in the past of defending Lightfoot, which isn't necessarily the case. And people are surprised that as someone who is right-leaning, why I don't attack her? But it seems relatively simple and consistent. I'm a solutions guy, and I think to solve a problem, you need to get to the root of the problem. And whatever your thoughts are on Lightfoot or Emanuel, they are not the root of the problem. The culture is. So that is what I focus on. They can change some things, but until you address that, nothing really changes. So here Matt explains why it was important to address what he saw as Lightfoot's failures.
And I got to take an interesting turn here. You talked about the Chicago Neighborhood Initiative, the CNI, and I want to bounce, which is a good thing, right? To help that neighborhood. We need to try to learn from it and multiply that, but balance that with what people are talking about, which is more like we just need more support services, which are more focused on solely government or systemic racism. So I guess the title of this segment is going to be Lightfoot. You write a lot about Lori Lightfoot. Mm-hmm. You talk about, like you do, the neighborhoods, beginning, middle, end. You talk about what she ran on and just question whether she's lived up to what she said she was going to do to this point. So why is it so important with all the problems Chicago had? We both agreed earlier that they existed long before her, the corruption and everything else. So why just this one person? Why so much Lightfoot?
I think, the death of George Floyd triggered something. Through the first four, almost 5 months of 2020, murders in Chicago were running at the same rate as the year before, 2019, which was a great year in Chicago, only about 500 murders. I know that sounds funny, but that's a very good year in Chicago. So 2020 was on pace with 2019, at least as far as the number of murders go, right up until the time that George Floyd died at the hands of that Minneapolis cop in late May of 2020. The reason I think it's important to focus on Lori Lightfoot's tenure, how she sold herself versus how she performed, is that all of a sudden things went crazy in Chicago and elsewhere right after George Floyd died. There were 18 people killed in one day on the last day of May. There were 105 people killed in July. 2020, and Lightfoot was not up to handling the crisis. So the city started spiraling into, wave after wave of violent crime, carjackings, murders, shootings. In 2021, it got worse. And all throughout this, Lightfoot has sort of frantically scrambled to shovel responsibility away from herself. So she's leaned very hard on the rhetoric of systemic racism all across the board. Economic development isn't going well on the south or west sides. She says that's because of racism and historic disinvestment. Murders are more prevalent in Black communities. She says that's because of systemic racism. So nowhere does she use her bully pulpit as the mayor. And this is why I hone in on her. The problem started long before her tenure. You're quite correct. But now things are worse than ever before. And it is time. What do people do in a pulpit, right? What does a preacher do when he preaches? He's usually talking about some aspect of morality. And so I believe that the mayor of Chicago at this point in time, whoever they are, has to talk about parenting, has to talk about the moral imperative of raising young men who don't turn into predators, street predators, by the time they're 12, 13, 14, or 15. And just ripping news from the headlines here in Chicago time and again. I mean, you can read about a 15-year-old boy who finally got arrested and was charged in connection with a large number of carjackings. You can read about an 11-year-old boy charged with serious crimes. There are kids out there, running regular carjacking rings, even doing shootings. And everyone knows that in our Cook County court system, run by District Attorney Kim Fox, that you're going to get off almost certainly if you're a juvenile. So Lightfoot is not the only one who wears a jacket here. And there are some politicians whose names are less known to the national audience, like the Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle and the Cook County Chief Judge Tim Evans, who are very, very wrapped up in this stuff. Particularly what is called bail reform, where people get out on low cash or no cash bail. But Lightfoot really, as the mayor, she's going to set the tone for better or for worse. So that's a large part of the reason I turn the spotlight on her in my book.
Coming up, more with Matt Rosenberg, author of What Next Chicago. You're listening to The Charles Love Show on AM 560, The Answer.
Now, more of the Charles Love Show on AM 560, The Answer, with your host, Charles Love.
Welcome back. I am continuing my conversation with Matt Rosenberg, author of What Next Chicago? And in this segment, we continue to talk about problems and the solutions. And as I often try to get to the root of the problem, we talk about some of these things. And obviously, earlier he spoke about corruption, incompetence, liberal policies, Lightfoot, all these things he thinks are part of the problem. And in his book and in our conversation, we talked about race. But as I often say, when race becomes the main factor you focus on, you tend to ignore the other things. So here I ask him, is that part of the problem? Is it that there's such a large focus on race that we can't even get to anything else because race is the hammer and the nail to many of those in power?
It is. It is. The racism that exists now is a disturbing and inconvenient racism. It's really what John McWhorter, for example, has called woke racism. If you have, for instance, Black and Latino students who are failing dramatically in public schools, assuming you're willing to give credence to standardized tests like the National Assessment of Educational Progress and the SAT. And I'm very willing to give credence to those, even though they're not, the sole determinant of capability and potential. We all know that. But if you see that students of color are failing dramatically in the public schools, not even able, most of them, to reach, you know, basic benchmark levels of proficiency, and then you explain that failure as de facto due to racism, or specifically because of something called whiteness, which is actually part of the Chicago Public Schools explanation and website. The big issue is whiteness. I'm just sitting there scratching my gosh darn head. You know, I've just thought too much about this, I guess. You know, what about vocabulary introduction? You know, what about reading to your child? What about merit pay, which has been rejected by the teachers union? You know, what about real school choice, which would mean taking away the growth cap on charter schools? You know, Lightfoot is the second mayor in a row to agree to a teachers union demand to cap the growth of charter schools. What about real school vouchers, you know, and having a vote on a constitutional amendment of the state constitution to clear the way for real school choice and let the money follow the student? If we cared about children, you know, rather than sort of digging in and making excuses for the failure of progressive governance, we would do those things to improve education and to turn failure into success. And no one wants to talk about the family. In fact, if you do, like the McDonald's CEO did in some texts to Mayor Lori Lightfoot of Chicago last autumn, texts that somehow got leaked out, you know, you're going to be called a racist for talking about parents needing to keep their kids from getting killed. That's what happened to them. So, yes. So when we get down to it and you look at the $170 billion with a B in pension obligations to their employees that the city of Chicago has through the year 2055. And I cite the sources on that in my book. If you look at that, and you look at how high taxes are, and you look at how taxes are already driving out the middle class. We barely got a middle class left in Chicago. It's been clearly documented through analysis of census tracts. Then you have to cut the city budget dramatically and or raise taxes sharply. You've got to swallow that pension obligation within 20 years. You got to get the monkey off everybody's back. So to do that, you're going to have to cut government scope of government services and programs in Chicago dramatically. You're also going to have to maybe sell off some assets, not at fire sale prices like Mayor Daley II did back in the aughts, but you're going to have to really look at stuff. You're going to have to look at privatizing certain operations.
But here's the problem. The stuff you're talking about, I mean, whether you think it's good or not, doesn't matter. This is the corner we've been backed into. You're 100% right. But our politicians are talking about the opposite of that.
Well, okay, yeah, very much. And in 2019, the Chicago City Council went from having one socialist on it to having six. And on top of that all, and you know this is a point I also emphasize in my book, we only have 33% voter turnout in our oddly scheduled municipal elections. They're in off years, in off months. We should have said, yeah, intentionally. And it's been that way forever. Oh, and Larry Krasner, the DA who thinks there's no murder problem in Philadelphia, even though they had a record high 562 murders last year. He was reelected as the bodies were piling up. He was reelected last November 2021, odd year election, with 21.88% turnout.
That sounds like de Blasio.
Exactly. New York City, same. So this stuff is arranged for a reason. So we're electing more socialists to the city council. No one's showing up to vote except the public employee union members. The whole thing is rigged and cooked. So how do you turn that around?
Coming up, my final segment with Matt Rosenberg, author of What Next Chicago? You are listening to The Charles Love Show on AM 560, The Answer.
The Charles Love Show continues on AM 560, The Answer. Here's Charles Love.
Welcome back. We've reached my final segment with Matt Rosenberg, author of What Next Chicago. And here we finish our discussion of solutions by talking about what we as citizens need to do to turn things around. We talk about low voter turnout. We talk about the expectations of family and the things we can do without the politicians. And I kind of give them a hard time for having so much hope in Eric Adams in New York.
There has to be a bottom-up voter education effort in the Black and Latino communities. There have to be better candidates. Actually, you know, Republicans are talking about mounting a slate of candidates for city offices here. I don't think it'll go anywhere. Do you know what we need? We need conservative Democrats. We need school choice Democrats. We need law and order Democrats. Now, people thought that Eric Adams was going to be a law and order Democrat. I just see your eyes bug out. I know. He said the right things. He was a cop. We know it's not working out so great 1 month into his first term. Now, give the man a chance. I'll still say that. But, you know, when I hear him say our violent crime is due to gun violence.
Right. I'm Let's close the gun shops. He started with gun shops. I can solve the problem because, you know, every criminal buys his gun at a gun shop. So if we just close the gun shop, the problem's solved.
You know, it's like they don't shoot themselves. There are 400 million guns, give or take, registered in the U.S. The vast majority of them are not misused. It's operator error. Again, it goes back to the choice.
The cartels. They're just all you're going to do is give them a new line of business. Oh, we don't need to sell drugs anymore. Let's just smuggle guns into the U.S. So then there'll be a whole, they call it, the iron pipeway or whatever they call it. It's already there. You're just going to double the number of guns in it.
It's dire. I think we need people to literally wake up. And the thing is, most of them are leaving. The most expedient thing to do is to leave.
That's the thing we end on right there. I wish it could be a better note, but that is the key. One, people leave instead of staying to fight. But the problem is you're going to have problems where you go because it just festers. It builds up in the other cities. We see it spreading. We see Georgia turning purple. We see Texas, Austin, and all the big cities in Houston being left. So if you do that, you don't win. And there's too many people that don't know what is going on. They see the headlines, maybe. Most of them aren't even watching the news. So until we get regular people to wake up, I don't know if we see the change that we really need. And unfortunately, you know, the good thing is you do a great job of laying this out. So hopefully people will pick up the book and read it and learn how these things happen, how you can fix these things. And maybe, you know, they'll pass it around and make people say, wow, maybe we should do something. Because until that stops, until people start to act, grassroots, as you call it, none of the politicians think people will continue to win with small percentage of the votes and nothing will really change.
I think it also has to change on a household by household basis. And I have some reason for optimism because I think that only 5 to 10% of the million households in Chicago have bad actors in them. I saw a lot of people on the South Side who are living the right way, living with moral authority. So there's land before and after politics where we can live righteously, do the right thing, raise our children right. And I think maybe start there and keep at it.
All right. Well, we will have to leave it there. He is Matt Rosenberg, journalist. He writes for City Journal and johncassnews.com and the author of the wonderful book, What's Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. Matt, thank you for your time.
Charles, it's been a pleasure. And readers can find that book at Amazon or Barnes & Noble online.
I'd like to thank Matt Rosenberg again for joining me. He told you how to pick up a copy of his book. Do so, and while you're at it, pick up Race Crazy as well. Check out the Cut the Bull podcast. And go to the New York Post and check out my article today about BLM. And as usual, thank you for listening. Talk to you next week.